I stand by that advice to the children, that a motivation for our action to look at those things that do bring deep joy or peace to our hearts is a good place to start in many aspects of our lives. But I also want to back up a little bit and talk some more about this parable, because it is potentially a lot more complicated than it appears at first. The parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Much of what I'm going to share with you today is drawn from this book, a book that I think I may have mentioned at least in passing before. It's called Short Stories by Jesus. It's written by Amy Jill Levine, who is a serious New Testament scholar. She teaches, I believe, at Vanderbilt. Her particular interest is the New Testament, the books of the New Testament, but focusing on their context arising out of first century Judaism. She is a practicing and observant Jew, and brings that commitment to her study of the Christian scriptures, the early Christian scriptures. And in this book, she takes 10 or 12 of Jesus' parables and examines them in considerable depth, trying to kind of peel away the layers that have accreted onto these parables throughout Christian history and help us understand perhaps more clearly how they might have actually been heard by Jesus' own audience, which would have been predominantly, if not exclusively, Jewish at the time. This is one of the parables that she looks at. And let me read to you just a little bit of her introduction to this parable. Two fellows go up to the temple to pray. One righteous and one sinful. One honored as a popular leader and respected teacher, and one despised as a collaborationist with the Roman government. One who has an abundance of good deeds prays a prayer of thanksgiving, and the other, a self-identified sinner, simply asks for mercy. We have here two conventional types, the upright and the fallen. Because Jesus' story is a parable, and because parables do the unexpected, we might expect the unsubtle points that the sinner turns out to be a saint and the saint turns out to be satanic. We might expect that to be the point of the parable, since parables often turn things upside down. And, she continues, that is how the parable has traditionally been understood. The Pharisee is seen to be a sinner. The tax collector becomes a saint. However, this expectation that that is the parable's meaning is in part what the parable thwarts. The saint is not a sinner. And the sinner is not a saint. And our conventionally unconventional reading about a reversal of status in the long run gets us nowhere. If we come away from this parable saying, thank God I am not like that Pharisee, we've gotten nowhere. And that is the easiest interpretation to fall into. The parable appears at first reading, at least to us today, to condemn the Pharisee's actions as a model for us, and yet to hold on the humility and penitence of the tax collector, so that we may be like the tax collector, but not like the Pharisee. We've been conditioned over the years. readers to think of Pharisees as poor role models for us as followers of Jesus, as hypocrites, as hyper-legalists. Levine reminds us, though, that that would not have been the perspective of Jesus' own audience. The Pharisees were, in general, highly respected as local religious leaders and teachers. Those from the local community who cared for and taught those in their community. The Pharisees would have been automatically and generally respected by the people in Jesus' day. We have also become familiar over the years with this sort of type or this image of the tax collector as the model example of a sinner on the way to redemption. And that surely is a role that we might sympathize with and even in many ways seek to follow. Recognizing our faults and yet seeking redemption through Jesus. And Jesus certainly did, throughout his ministry, welcome and associate those who were identified as outcasts and welcome them into his fellowship. But this particular image of the tax collector as sort of the model representative of the sinner on the way to redemption, that particular image is primarily Luke's, not Jesus's. And we also do well to remember, Levine reminds us, that Jesus' hearers would have known the tax collectors among them as traitors and as cheats. Tax collectors were Jews who turned on their own community to side with the occupying Roman government and collect taxes on behalf of the Roman government, often with fraud and extortion folded in as well. Jesus' hearers would not have seen anything to commend in a tax collector. So at the first pass, the saint, the Pharisee, is not a sinner and would not have been seen as a sinner by those hearing Jesus' words. The words that the Pharisee speaks certainly sound to us as extremely self-righteous and judgmental. But it is a prayer that was not uncommon in style or words at that time. A prayer of thanksgiving, presumably honest thanksgiving, thanksgiving for the opportunity to be a person of the covenant. To be a person in relationship with God through the covenant, through the Torah. Something for which the Pharisees were grateful. So the saint is not necessarily, at least in the perspective of first century Judaism, not a sinner to be condemned. Nor is the sinner perceived as a saint within that same context. The tax collector presumably sought something in coming to the temple to pray. He asks for mercy, but he offers no potential amendment of life. He offers no recompense for what he has done or who he is. To Jesus' hearers, the judgment on the tax collector would have at best still been out. Whether he was redeemable or not. So then Levine takes the words of the actual parable and looks at them as well in more detail. The first words that we heard from Luke's Gospel today seem to encourage us in the traditional interpretation. Jesus told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. Those are Luke's words, not Jesus. Luke's words, already writing to a Gentile audience some years after Jesus' life and teaching. Luke's words imposing a meaning on this parable when Jesus so often intentionally did not give a specific meaning. This is what Luke wants you to think the parable means. Maybe it does, but we should remember that this is Luke's opinion, that this parable is all about the righteous being brought down. Jesus' words begin just with a story. Two men went up to the temple to pray. Two men went up to pray. The concluding words of today's passage, though, also need further attention. And actually, I think it'll be maybe a little bit clearer if I come back to that later. One of the other things that we need to remember, or that can be helpful to remember, about first century Judaism is that it was a life of communality. It is very difficult for us to wrap our heads around it, almost impossible for us, I think, these days to accept. And I remember being taught this over and over again in Old Testament studies and seminary. This is not just Levine's perspective. The sense of living life in common with one another, a communitarian life. The sins of one person in that community were seen to impact everyone else spiritually, to be a spiritual darkness in the lives of everyone in the community, even those who did not commit that particular sin. The sin was shared, borne by all. Similarly, though, righteousness could be shared. The goodness, the righteousness, the good action, the faithful action of one could be shared by the community as a whole also. That part of it is not often remembered as frequently as the other part, even in first century Judaism. That idea that a life of communality, if sin is shared, righteousness is also shared. And that perhaps is the provocative reminder that Jesus was trying to get across in this parable. Perhaps one way of looking at this parable. If we look at how the parable ends, Jesus says, "I tell you, this man," the tax collector who had asked for mercy, "this man went down to his home justified, made righteous, rather than the other, rather than the Pharisee." And then the concluding phrase, "For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, but all who humble themselves will be exalted." That last phrase, commendable as it is, and true to Jesus' teaching as it is a stock gospel phrase that occurs in a number of places in the gospel accounts. And we don't know for sure whether Jesus attached it to this parable or whether Luke attached it to this parable, this sort of teaching about being humble. It may be another sort of postscript by Luke trying to encourage us to interpret this in the same way that Luke did. Then we have that bit about, "I tell you, this man went down to his home justified rather than the other." Rather. The Greek word is para. Para. It can mean rather than. It's also the root of our word parallel. And it can mean next to. alongside of. It can also mean because of. So other potential translations, significantly different in meaning, of that last phrase of Jesus' words could be, I tell you, the tax collector went down to his home alongside of the other. Or, the tax collector went down to his home justified, made righteous, because of the Pharisee. Because of the Pharisee. Communality, where the righteousness of the Pharisee is shared with the tax collector. Levine tells her own parable. Oh, I messed up my... To get this point across, I messed up my remarks. To try and help us understand this sort of generosity offered by God in which righteousness is shared. This type of generosity, she writes, shown by a God who makes the sun shine on the just and the unjust alike, the type of generosity that allows the tax collector to collect or receive the benefit of the good deeds of the Pharisee. This sort of generosity is the sort that we want for ourselves, but sometimes don't always want others to have. To give an up-to-date reading of how this parable works, and so the genius of Jesus' teaching, we need a modern example. Here's what this parable sounds like in a 21st century context. So here's another way to look at the communality of living in first century Judaism and potentially also within the body of Christ today. The communality of life. The story of the tax collector's ability to tap into the communal grace of that first century community is the ancient version of the middle school group project. A group is formed in this assignment, in the middle school group project, a group is formed. And that group puts together the smart one, the one who's good at art, the one who is able to provide provisions, coffee, donuts, or scotch, depending upon the setting, and the one who both literally and figuratively brings nothing to the table. The group is brought together, a variety of gifts, and the one who potentially brings nothing to the table. Three do their fair share, and more, since they cover the fourth's work as well. The project receives an excellent grade. The fourth, who may show up at the meetings with all sincerity, like the tax collector, but who contributes nothing, benefits from the work of others. In middle school, Levine writes, where I was the smart one, I found this system unfair. I was justified. I got the A. But alongside me, indeed, because of me, the slacker was justified and got an A also. In that common life that Jesus may or may not have been holding up to us within the body of Christ. Levine continues, we are all our brothers and sisters' keepers. And living in a community is another form of group work. We all have something to contribute, even if what we give is the opportunity for someone else to provide us a benefit. If we take more seriously this necessary interrelationship, we might be more inclined to consider others Because our actions, whether for ill or for good, will impact them. And if our good deeds aid someone else, rather than begrudge them, why not celebrate all who are justified? I know for me, and perhaps for many of us, it depends upon how you see yourself in that middle school group project. Do you transfer those same feelings to the body of Christ? Or have you, from time to time, been that person who needed to be held up by the faith and good deeds of others to receive through the community that abundant blessing that God offers without qualification, without measure? Whether or not Levine is right in this particular interpretation, we cannot say. But if we look at this parable with fresh eyes and look at this parable as telling us something about God, not so much about Pharisees or tax collectors or who is better or worse in this particular story, but telling us something about God, however you read it, it tells us about the gift of unqualified, unimaginable grace. That would have been unsettling to Jesus' hearers, just as it is both welcome and unsettling to us. An idea that grace is given without limitation, even to those that we might